We are in the last chapter of the book of Proverbs, the very last chapter. I am so excited about this. This is a good chapter. This chapter is different than all of the chapters that came before. In fact, I think you're going to enjoy this chapter as much as I do. The first verse says it's the words of King Lemuel, the oracle which his mother taught him. That's very important because that's exactly what the original says. The words which to King Lemuel, which taught to him by his mother. All the rest of the Proverbs, chapter 1 through 30, have been men talking about things and teaching us things from the Lord. And here in the last chapter of the book of Proverbs, we actually have a man who is telling us what his mother taught him. Very important. A woman ends the book of Proverbs. This is an oracle also, just like the last chapter. Chapter 30 was an oracle. That means that these are not Proverbs. These two chapters are not Proverbs. These two are direct messages from the Lord that are being delivered to people, because they need to know. They're not pithy little sayings that you can remember this one or that one. Both of these chapters have to do with entire messages, an entire subject. And so here, in this first verse, we see that it's from King, coming to us through King Lemuel. Now that's the person it's coming from. Now that's kind of interesting, because King Lemuel, some of the authors and the commentators have tried to say this is King Solomon. This is Bathsheba giving the message to King Solomon and King Solomon delivering it to us. But that cannot be the fact, and we find that when we get into verse 2 after we delve into it. Verse 2 says, "What, O my son?" It's a question. "And what, O son of my womb?" It's a question. "And what, O son of my vows?" It's a question. That caused some problems for me. And normally we just take off and we just start going and gathering information. And we start looking at the commentators. We start looking at the other versions of the scripture. And we find out what it says. And we retell to you an application and an understanding of what it says. But I had problems with this. Here's three questions. And I read them over and over and over and over again. And I said, what in the world is this trying to say? What, O my son? And what, O son of my womb? And what, O son of my vows? So I had to go to the different versions of the English, and I realized that they did not agree. So that caused me to have to go back to the Hebrew. I always try the English first because I struggle with Hebrew. I struggle with Greek, just like many people struggle. And we have so many good English versions that we should not have to struggle with. But as you've noticed all the way through Proverbs, we've struggled with some things that are just not really accurate translations of the original. So we go to the original. And actually in the original, we find an interesting thing. Yes, this is written in Hebrew, but interspersed in here, for instance, the first one is the word son. I don't need to tell you what it is, what the word in Hebrew is, but let me tell you this. The word son was not a Hebrew word. It was a Chaldean word. Okay, so it's Chaldean. When did Chaldean words come into the Hebrew language? We skip on down and we have two or three more words besides the word son three times in here that are Chaldean words right in this first verse. And we look on down through the rest of the entire proverb and we've got Chaldean words stuck into these Hebrew words. What does that mean? The population of the Chaldeans was eventually absorbed into the Babylonian Empire. The Babylonian Empire absorbed them with Nebuchadnezzar's father. Of course, when a group of people come in, words from those people's languages or language begin to find a place in the new language of the homeland. Those who come from Mexico come to America, and Mexican words end up in the English language that we use on a regular basis. They are Mexican words or Spanish words or Tejas words or words that you would like to that come from the other language. Well, prior to Nebuchadnezzar coming in and conquering the southern kingdom, all passages of scripture that we have are very clearly Hebrew writings. Oh, there may be an Akkadian word that slips in or something from known countries, but this little Chaldean area of Chaldean words, they are not found in any material in our Old Testament that comes before Nebuchadnezzar takes over the southern kingdom. Nebuchadnezzar conquers the southern kingdom in 606 BC. Well, what does that mean? Well, if these proverbs were of Solomon's age, Solomon is in the 1000 BC. We have 300 to 400 years of Hebrew language before any Chaldean words show up in the Hebrew language. So for those commentators who come along and say, this Lemuel has to be Solomon, it cannot be so, because the language that Solomon spoke did not have these Chaldean words in it. So this had to come way down after the time of Nebuchadnezzar. We do not know who King Lemuel is. We have no idea who he is. For us to speculate, we could never even tell you. All we know is that he is a young man who has a wonderful mother, who is interested in her son, who is going to be king. And she is going to tell and instruct her son in the kind of woman that he should look for to be his bride, his wife, and his princess, who will sit on the throne with him. So here, as we look at this, it's interesting, because when we go back to an very early English translation, the 1538 Miles Coverdale version, Miles Coverdale renders this different. He renders it exactly like it is in the Hebrew. Here are three questions in verse 2, but in the Miles Coverdale, it is three statements. In the Hebrew, it is three statements. And the statements are this: my son, you son of my body, O dear beloved son of my vows. In other words, you son, I bore you, I gave birth to you, and I gave birth to you after I had given my vows to my husband. In other words, she is stating that you, O son, you were born properly. You were born exactly as you should have been born. Nothing ungodly or irregular was done. I am not speaking to you as an adopted son. I am not speaking to you as a nephew. I am speaking to you, Lemuel, as a natural born son of my body that I gave birth to, and I did it after I said my vows to my husband. So that's what she's saying here in verse 2. Verse 3, look here. Verse 3 says, she starts giving these instructions. Oh, you son, I want you to know some things. And this passage, this last chapter of the book of Proverbs, is probably the most loved and famous passage of all of the Proverbs. Oh, we've got one little here, but I'm talking about chapters. And actually, the chapter, the part we love in this proverb, starts in verse 10. It's the part of the virtuous woman, the excellent wife, the wife that excels above all others. I know we used this passage at my mother's funeral. In my 8 o'clock class, there were 9 or 10 people who used this passage at their mother's funeral. It's just a favorite passage for women who are just godly women. But we fail to often realize that this is the message of a woman to her son of how to pick out his wife. So she starts off by giving him three instructions of a type of woman or women that he should not take part with. He says in verse 3 here, he says this. He says, do not give your strength to women or your ways to that which destroys kings. It is not for kings, O Lemuel. Well, what in the world does that mean? That causes us to also have to say, what does it mean by strength? Well, in the Hebrew, the word strength here means do not enter into a sexual relationship with women. You notice it's women. It's not a woman, it's women. Mom is saying, son, don't be like all these others out here. Don't go around and have a relationship with all these women in the kingdom searching for the one that makes you happy. That is something that will destroy you as a king. And rightly so. And rightly so. She says it is not something that a king should do. It is not proper for a king to do it. This is her message. She is saying you need to go out and you need to find a woman that fits everything just right, that has all the proper characteristics, but don't go spread yourself around to all the women of the kingdom. Do not play the field, as we might say, in other words. Look here, verse number 4b. She says, it is not for kings to drink wine or for rulers to drink strong drink, lest they drink and forget what is decreed and pervert the rights of all the afflicted. So here she's adding to this, don't go messing around with all these women, spreading yourself around in the kingdom, and do not take part in drinking wine. Do not drink this drug. Do not drink. We all know that fermented beverages throughout the ages, whether it is today or it was 6,000 years ago when it was Noah, causes people to get drunk. And those things which are proper and rightly done in the kingdom by the king have to always be properly done. King Lemuel, what happens if there's a law that is a good law that protects the innocent, that protects the needy? And lo and behold, you have inebriated yourself with drink and you judge improperly. Then you have failed as a king. She says, do not do that. So what happens if you have to judge and you're drunk and you pervert the judgment to someone that had you been of sound mind, you would not have made that decision? Going on in verse 6, she says to Lemuel, give strong drink to him who is perishing, dying in other words, and wine to him whose life is bitter. Let him drink and forget his poverty and remember his troubles no more. Now he uses the word poverty. He uses the word bitter. He also here, he uses the word perishing. He's talking about sick people. In other words, she's saying there's a proper place for you to use wine. There's a proper place for you to use that. When someone is sick and they are dying and they are in their poverty of life, that means their body has given up. Their body is on its last leg. They cannot get around. They cannot move. The body is ailing and the body is failing. She's saying, look, you can give wine to them. Don't you as a king drink wine. But when someone is sick and dying, when they're perishing, whenever the body is ill, it is okay to help with them with that, to give them wine, to give them that drug. In other words, give them medicine. Use that wine like a medicine because that's what it is. You can use it at that point in time to help them so they remember their troubles, remember their aches and their pains and their hurts as they're dying. It has nothing to do in this word poverty. This is a special word. It has nothing to do with economic status. The word means everything about how your body is functioning. So if your body is failing, the mom says to the king-to-be, it's okay to use some drugs here, some wine, to help take the pain away. Going on, verse 8, it says, open your mouth for the dumb, for the rights of the unfortunate. Open your mouth, judge righteously, and defend the rights of the afflicted and needy. Wine must be avoided because it inhibits your ability to do your work, Lemuel. Avoid wine. Stay away from it. Why is this so important? Well, because she's telling her king son that he has a job to do. And his job is to protect and to guard and to defend the lives and the rights of those who are needy and afflicted. Who else can they look to protect them if it's not the king? Oh, the king's men won't do it if the king won't give them orders to do it. It is the job of the king, of the ruler, to look after the needy and the afflicted. So she says to them, if you're drunk, you can't take care of that. If you're sober, you can take care of that because that's your job. You need to get at the business of being king, and you need to be king all the time. A leader needs to be a leader all the time. A person who's looking after the needs of the afflicted and the needy needs to do that all the time. That's what their job is. And the mother wants this king to be son. The son's going to be king to make sure he understands that there are three things he's got to look out for. Number one, wine. Number two, those who are dying. And number three, those who are afflicted and need his help. Because there are always people in this world who get up every morning with the intent on finding somebody they can take advantage of. Somebody. There's always somebody who's trying to take advantage of us. We have telephones in our houses, and we have cell phones that we carry with us. And we are now at the point where we are getting telephone calls from everybody in the world telling us they're so-and-so, and if we don't give money or send money or whatever, then we are going to be taken to jail. And it scares us. Last week, we made an announcement to you to never worry about the IRS because they cannot call you. They will always write you. This week, we find out that a law has been written that has changed that. That now the IRS can call you to collect. Where before, they had to send you a letter and had to have you call them, and then they could start a conversation with you. That has now changed. Think what that has done to the poor and the needy that are out there, who the people can pose as IRS agents to now come and inflict and oppress the poor and the needy who are out there. And not only that, you don't even have to be poor and needy to be afflicted by these folks. They're coming after us. You wait, you'll have the phone calls. My suggestion to you on that is if they call you, you tell them, you send me an official letter, and I'll call you back. That's my suggestion. I may be wrong, but that's my suggestion right now. Because we've told you for years, they will not contact you. And now, as of we've learned, as of a bill that was passed for funding of a government, that was now included, where they can now call you. We have to be careful. Look here, verse 10. This is the favorite part. This is the good part. This is the part we love because it talks about this excellent woman. But I want to tell you something interesting about it before I read the first verse. The Hebrew language has 22 letters in it. Each letter of the Hebrew language has a meaning. Every letter has a meaning. By the way, every letter also has a numeral, a number amount attached to it. Starting here in verse 10 through the end of the chapter, there are 22 statements made by this mother to Lemuel. In the original language, the beginning of each of these statements begins with an alphabet letter from the Hebrew alphabet in order 1 through 22. The meaning of the alphabet letter is used by the mother to tell you in an instant what the topic of that point of the characteristic of the woman is about. Now listen, this is not new to the Bible. This is not new at all. We go back to the book of Genesis. The book of Genesis, chapter 1, the verses in chapter 1 all begin with the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet. In Genesis chapter 2, the second chapter of the book of Genesis, all the statements in that chapter begin with the second letter of the Hebrew alphabet. Therefore, if 1 and 2 are that way, guess how 3 is? It's the third letter. Chapter 4 is the fourth letter, chapter 5, and it goes all the way through chapter 22. And in chapter 23 of the book of Genesis, the alphabet starts over again. It goes all the way through, starts over again, and then we hit chapter 50. And lo and behold, we don't have a 51 in Genesis, but we have a chapter 1 in Exodus. And guess what? Moses did not leave the alphabet. The Exodus passage picks up right on the next letter, goes through the rest of the 22, starts all over again, all the way through Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. That's how we know where the chapter breaks are in. That's how they put the chapter breaks in the first 5 books of the Bible. If you go to Psalms, chapter 119, there are 22 sections of 8 verse sections in Psalm 119. It's the longest psalm in our Bible. And each of those 8 verse sections, the topic and the content in those 8 verses comes from the letter that is used of the alphabet in order to tell us what it's about. When it's talking about the home or the house, it's talking about the home or the house in those 8 verses. When it's talking about grasping on and holding strong, what the letter means, it's talking about that in those 8 verses. Well, here in Proverbs chapter 31, this wonderful mother tells her son that is going to be king 22 characteristics of the woman that should become his wife. And here we go. It says, and you'll see I've put the meaning of the letter up above it. The first letter in the Hebrew alphabet means to learn. That is the meaning of the first letter. The mother says this, verse 10, an excellent wife who can find? For her worth is far above jewels. Well, other versions say this, that her worth is that she is a virtuous woman, that she is a noble woman. All of those are correct. They are all correct. She need to learn that she is above. She's strong. She's full of energy. Her character is above reproach. But more than that, her worth. Take all of the valuable stones, the precious stones in the world. Take every one, every diamond, every ruby, every jasper, everything that's out there, every topaz, pile them all in a pile if you could do that. And this woman, that if you find her, she is worth more than that whole pile put together. She is priceless to you as a husband. Don't look after all the women. Go for that one woman who is priceless. In other words, learn that the right woman, that is God's woman for you, is invaluable to your life. Verse number 11, the home, second letter of the Hebrew alphabet. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. The word home comes in. This verse talks about home. Why is that? Because it's a reference to where a husband should find his home. A home is not a house. Some of us live in big houses. Some of us live in little houses. Some of us live on boats. Some of us live in mansions. Some of us live in motorhomes. Some of us live in motorhomes. We live in different places. Some of us live in our car, or have lived in our car for 5 months. And it was my home. It was my place where I lived. But the house, the physical nature of the structure, is not the home. The home is made up of the people. Where is your home, King Lemuel? Your home is where this excellent wife is and the relationship that you have with her. So here, the mother instructs Lemuel for him to find and to place his heart in the wife that he finds. And if he does so, he will lack nothing. She provides for him everything. There is nothing that is needed that can be found in any other woman, any place else in the world, because she is his all in all, and all that he will ever need, she lacks nothing. She will take care of the family that he has with her. She will be a place where she will make sure that that family is safe. She will assure that under her watchful eye, that everything will be cared for, and he can be sure, without a doubt, that under her eye, her spotless eye, his spotless wife, every provision will be made. Look at the next verse, verse 12, benefit. She does him good and not evil all the days of his life. Third letter, the husband. The husband of an excellent wife will never, ever be disappointed by her in any way, form, or fashion. In everything that she does for in her life, it will bring value to him. It will bring assistance to him. It will help him. Oh, she may be doing it over here, but it's actually assisting him because of what people are seeing she's doing. We're going to get into that in a few minutes because that's in this list where she's doing these things that brings great notoriety to him because he is attached to her. Swinging door. You wouldn't think about a swinging door being attached to a virtuous or excellent wife, but listen to it and understand. She looks for wool and flax and works with her hands in delight. So the fourth letter here means swinging door back and forth. She goes out the door of the house. She goes and finds the material that she needs to do a project. She comes back through the door of the house and goes back into the home, the house, and there she uses those materials to make sure that she can put together things that she can go back out through the swinging door to go sell or to go trade or to go use for some purpose. And then she comes back and gets more and she comes back. She's constantly going in and out of the door of that home to provide. How is that so? Look at verse 14. It says, and lo, she is like merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. The fifth letter of the alphabet, the hey, is used actually as a connecting word, a connecting alphabet letter. It connects what is being said to what came before. So before we saw she was looking for wool, she was looking for flax, and she worked with her hands in delight. And here it says to us, by the word that we see this translated in the Hebrew as the word lo or and lo. In fact, in the book of Matthew, which was originally written in Hebrew and then translated into Greek, we saw, and lo, the angels of the Lord. You remember that part? Okay. That is connecting us to what's just been said about the angels previous. That's the way this is used. Here we see this excellent wife is a person that's going to go and come through the swinging door. And lo, whenever she goes and comes, she's going to bring her food from afar. In other words, as she goes and as she comes, she's doing what she needs to do so she can provide the food for the household as they need it. And lo, she operates in the home like a merchant ship operates on the seas, going and coming, bringing this from there, bringing this here, coming and going. Verse 15, the word hook, or the word peg, or the word place. Verse 15, she rises also while it is still night and gives food to her household and portions to her maidens. In the temple and in the synagogue, or the tabernacle, I should say, When they put the boards up, they had pegs where they went, and that those pegs were to place the hooks of the curtains in a certain place. It's where they went. That's the idea of putting things where they go. Here in this verse, the excellent wife is the one who will get up early in the morning, who will take the food she's brought from afar, and she will peg it or hook it or place it where it goes on the table so her household and her family can have food the next morning. She does her job. There's a proper place. There's a proper time when the food's to be on the table, and she makes sure that it happens at the right time. Verse 16. Abundance. She considers a field and buys it. From her earnings, she plants a vineyard. Seventh letter. Means abundance. This wife, she goes out, she finds a field that she thinks will be good. The soil is just right. It's ready for a crop. She plants the crop. The crop grows. She nurtures it. She harvests it. She has enough for her family, and she has abundance left over. Because remember, this woman is very, very good at what she does. And she's providing for the household. She does not use her husband's money to buy the field. She uses her own. How does she get money to buy the field? Well, she has made things. Remember, she went and got wool and she got flax and she did things with that. She has the ability to go and make funds and to provide things that she needs. And now she's found a field and she's planted it in this. Now there's an abundance coming from that field and she's able to take it and she's able to go sell it. Boy, she's strong. In fact, that's what comes up next. Look here.